As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
This is Issues 2020. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Eric Kahle, Executive Director, Wichita Sedgwick County Historical Museum. Welcome to Issues 2020.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Now, how have you been operating the museum during the pandemic? What things have you been doing there?
Well, we've been very careful. We follow all the guidelines that we've been handed through Sedgwick County and the City of Wichita, and we're located in a Wichita city-owned building, the original city hall, and so we follow all the same rules they do at the city building.
Now in this program, we're going to focus on local history, as this year we celebrate Wichita's sesquicentennial. That's the 150th birthday. City charter was signed in 1870 with at least one signee of some note. That would be Mrs. McCarty. Tell us about this woman, please.
Oh, yes. Catherine McCarty is famous for being the only woman to sign the charter, and along with one African-American gentleman, Richard Robinson, and then 122 others, all white men who signed that charter in 1870.
And so Mrs. McCarty's son, which made some made a name for himself down in New Mexico. Who was that?
Yes. Well, his name was William, and he spent his early life here in Wichita, and it was actually, as I recall, written up in the Wichita Eagle a time or two as referred to as a street urchin, and later became quite notorious in New Mexico as Billy the Kid.
All right. Now before that, let's go backtrack to 1864. Of course, Kansas came into the state came in as a free state, and in 1864, Jesse Chisholm established a trading post here. Tell us about Jesse Chisholm, Eric.
Well, he's a very interesting early figure of influence, not just here in Wichita, but all through the Southwest. He moved. He was of Scottish descent through his father, and he was Cheyenne by his mother, and it was a matrilineal line, so he's considered of his mother's people. And they moved eventually to the Oklahoma area in those days, known as Indian Territory. And he became famous as a sort of a very diplomatic trader, speaking many different languages and becoming widely known and respected. He came to the Arkansas River Valley, our area, first in the 1830s, and in the 1860s ended up establishing a trading post here when business became more viable.
Of course, if folks are familiar with the Chisholm Trail running north and south, goes right down through the middle of Wichita. Was that a cattle trail or trade trail? What was that?
Yes, after Chisholm's death, it the trail he established became known by his name as the Chisholm Trail, and was widely used in the post-war cattle trade in the cattle era, right about the same time the city was being established.
1868, James R. Meade established another trading post here, and Meade did a lot of exploring around this area, and he did a lot to really get this town going, didn't he?
Yeah, he was first in this part of the country. He came here at a very young age to trade and be an adventurer. He was also ended up being kind of an anthropologist as well. But he established himself in Towanda initially, and then in about 1863, first laid eyes on our area, the River Valley. And it's a very interesting account. His biography, his autobiography, his memoir is very interesting reading.
And his descendants still live here, some people?
Yes, his grandson and great-granddaughter both live here in Wichita yet today.
Now, continuing with the Wichita timeline, 1872, the Wichita Eagle newspaper and the Wichita Daily Beacon began publication. Tell us about the newspapers.
Well, the newspapers in those days were the way you communicated. It was really the only media out there. It was pretty immediate. The first newspaper in Wichita started in 1870 by a guy named Fred Sowers, who came here from Leavenworth, and called the paper the Vedette. And I think it was a weekly initially. He eventually grew that paper and changed the name to the Beacon. And the Eagle, a competing paper at that time, run by the Murdochs, was a real promotional tool and drew a lot of people through very savvy publication and promotion of the city. It drew a lot of people to this very spot, Wichita.
And why did they come here, other than good publicity? Were they looking for something specific, or just in those days, just looking for a new life and interesting things to do?
Yeah, well, you know, you think about Kansas entering the Union in 1861, just as the Civil War broke out, and give it 5 years, and then treaty is signed here, which opens up, it acquires the land from the Indians and opens up the area for settlement. And so post-war, people were moving west again and just flooded into this area. It was just a place that was well promoted and the next step west. So Kansas at that time became known for the greatest post-war migration destination of any state. I think Lincoln himself said if he were to go anywhere, he would move to Kansas.
Well, you mentioned the Indian presence, and there was a treaty that there were a number of tribes that signed that treaty, right?
Yeah, the signers of the it's called the Treaty of the Little Arkansas. It was signed up near 61st Street North in Seneca along the river. There's a little monument up there. And it was signed by the Kiowa, the Comanche, the Plains Apache, the South Cheyenne, and the Southern Arapaho. And they all ceded the land to the government at that point. And it was placed in an instrument known as the Osage Indian Trust Lands.
Yeah. In those early days, there were some interesting characters living and working here, and some of them coming through and going on to even more fame and fortune, including a fellow named Wyatt Earp and another guy named Bat Masterson, a couple of fascinating characters.
Yeah, an amazing array of people traveled through. Some of them stayed for a while, including Wyatt Earp and Bat Masterson. Bat Masterson's parents moved here as well. They're interred up at Highland Cemetery on Hillside Street, along with a lot of other interesting pioneers at both of those cemeteries. It's sort of an outdoor museum which would be an attractive thing these days when going inside isn't recommended.
Right. Now another step forward involves education. In 1892, Fairmount Institute opened, later to become Wichita State University, and then in 1898, Garfield University opened. That would later become French University. Tell us about that.
You know, Wichita, being an up-and-coming town with a lot of ambition, established several universities. And this is at a point in the history where we've become the fastest-growing city in the United States in the late 1880s. And Garfield is interesting. That building was designed by two architects here in Wichita that are known nationally. They were here during the boom years. They designed our building, the original City Hall, which is now the Museum Building, and Davis Hall, what's known as Davis Hall, which was originally Garfield University. Everything here was named after a Union Civil War general, it seems like, and Garfield was right at the top. Of course, he was president and very popular figure. The Union veterans had a lot of power in Wichita at that time, and their post was called the Garfield Post.
You mentioned the architecture. Now, the building that you're in, as you say, the original City Hall, is located at, is it Main and Water?
William, yeah. Yeah, Main and William. We're just east of Century 2.
And you can see the similarity between that building and the Garfield Hall, or the Davis Administration Building, that's currently on the French University campus. It looks like they're sisters or something.
Yeah, they really are nice companion buildings. Very interesting. And both places, anyone interested in architecture and local history should visit.
You're listening to Issues 2020 on the Intercom radio stations, and our guest is Eric Kahle, Executive Director, Wichita Sedgwick County Historical Museum. I want to back up just a little bit, Eric, and you've been having visitors come into the museum, so I presume under the city guidelines or rules, do they have to wear a mask in there at all times, or how does that work?
Yes, that's required here. We require a mask, and of course, these things are becoming common social etiquette now.
With the
social distancing and so forth. We limit the number of people who come here, but actually, the historical museum is really a light traffic destination anyway, so that's not a problem. We have sort of curtailed our big events where we have hundreds and hundreds of people here. Of course, that can't happen right now, so we've pushed the pause button on that. But it's still a great place to come and learn, especially in the sesquicentennial year, just about the heritage of your community.
Yeah, right. And you're on, is it four floors that you're on right now?
Uh-huh. We have over two dozen different exhibits, and our exhibits are, you know, kind of encyclopedic in scope because local history includes everything. We tell our story, you know, it's not a video, it's not a book, it's we tell a story through artifacts. So we have almost 80,000 artifacts in our collection. We've been collecting them for 80 years now. So it's some fascinating stuff all arranged to tell the story of our local story.
Now, in the early 1970s, my wife, we were newly married, and she actually worked in City Hall down there at the Human Resources Department. I don't know, the third or fourth floor. So she actually worked in that building before it became a museum.
Oh, it might have been with Dale Richmond.
Yeah,
he's one of our board presidents. We're a nonprofit, and we have a nice board that does a lot of work for the museum. But I hear stories all the time. Now, to come in here today, if you worked in those days, you would not recognize the place because we've renovated it to more of an original Victorian appearance, so that we treat it as an artifact in a way, and it's also been entirely redone. It had been remodeled nearly a half a dozen times over the nearly 80 years it served as City Hall. So we had a lot of work to do when we got it.
One of the fascinating parts of the museum that for my grandchildren, when I brought them down there, they were absolutely fascinated by two things. One of them was the phone booth, that you, the telephone booth
yes.
that you have, and the other was the typewriter. And the kids were just astounded by those.
It's a great connection, intergenerational connection for older people to connect with younger people, and a lot of conversations and fun get started here. But the telephone booth is unique. I don't know if there are any others in town, but this one still works for a dime. So.
Now, getting back to history now, the aviation industry got started here in the 20s and 30s. And tell us a little bit about Cessna and Beech and Boeing and then later Learjet. Tell us about aviation.
Well, the aviation story here is really exceptional. And it really started in 1911 at a air show that was put on. It was a traveling air show. And you think about how new that was. Automobiles were brand new. Most people used horses until the 20s. But at the same time, here come these airplanes. The Wright brothers made them famous in Le Mans, France in 1908. And in just a couple of years, they're here out on the prairie doing a show. And that inspired a lot of local people, farmers who were great inventors, very entrepreneurial by nature, started building planes like Clyde Cessna and so forth. And then the oil money that came up was able to fund an industry where some of these really innovative plane builders were able to go into business. So, and that happened from the get-go, and it's hung on. It was nearly killed in the Depression, but it was revived in World War II, where we, you know, became a major manufacturer.
The airport, the first airport out in the southeast part of town, is just a terrific building. That's still there, and it's a beautiful building. And then a new airport built in 1953 out on the west side. Tell us about the airports a little bit.
Yeah, you know, and in fact, the original, what was considered the original city airport was right over where Beechcraft is today out on Webb and, you know, Central around in there.
Oh, okay, yeah.
There was actually a municipal airport there. They built the really first nice one, and this is once we became known as the Air Capital. That was built and is now the Kansas Aviation Museum over by McConnell Air Force Base off of Oliver. And so that's a great destination. As you're learning about your local heritage, be sure and visit that museum as well.
Yeah.
And then in the 50s, they abandoned that, turned it over to the United States government and Air Force, and built the one, we have a new one now, but it's at the old location out on West Kellogg.
Right. Now, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about Dockham, the Dockham Drugstore sit-in, which is, I think, in downtown Wichita, I believe, 1958. And North Carolina always gets credit for the first sit-in regarding civil rights and so forth. But I think Dockham must have been before that. Tell us about the Dockham sit-in.
Yes, the Dockham Drugstore sit-in was the first successful civil rights, student-led civil rights sit-in that opened up drugstore counters to serve all people. And it was little known nationally. It led the way to the sit-in movement that took hold through the 60s and kind of culminated with the Civil Rights Act in 1964. But this one, in fact, a lot of the participants were young people who kept their activities even secret from their parents, who would not have allowed them to put themselves in harm's way by doing a sit-in where they were not welcome downtown. So it really is a national first and something the community can really be proud of.
Talk about some of the great companies that began in Wichita. The White Castle Hamburger, Coleman, Pizza Hut, Renner Center. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, to make it here in Wichita, you had to be innovative and smart and ready to try something new. And a lot of that has happened. You could write volumes of books about the different businesses that began here. But one thing that was very timely, you know, there's aviation, sure. There's fast food, though, and there's a great kind of modern food service story that was told here. It kind of began with White Castle, you know, they had a whole new concept. They dressed up. It was all about sanitation and cleanliness and ease and, you know, it's about getting food quickly.
It was
brilliant. And that it's led to a whole nother tradition up from Pizza Hut, of course, in 58 again. And then Taco Tico, a great early concept, Freddy's. You know, they just keep coming. Wichita's a great place for that. Rent-A-Center, another national concept. It's all, I think, with the entrepreneurial spirit and uniqueness, a lot of forward progressive thinking in Wichita through the years.
Century 2 Convention Center and the library opened in 1969, and now there's a movement on to try to preserve them, but they were really something when they opened up in 69.
Yeah, you know, and we're looking back to our centennial year 50 years ago, and that was a big time for Wichita because you think, you know, people themselves have a lifespan of 50 years. So there were people around who saw the whole thing pretty much happen here. And it was a big thing to turn 100. So this was a time of urban renewal. They were taking out a lot of old buildings that had been used up, and they were building something for the next century is what they thought. The library building, which is very exceptional, it's in terms of architecture, it's called brutalist architecture, locally designed, and then Century 2 is iconic as a building also. That was a big time for Wichita, the Garvey Center and the Holiday Inn building were all built.
I want you to be philosophical a little bit for me. Share your thoughts with me on the study of history and the preservation of history. Well, I love history. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, history is essential. It's essentially the story, our story, and it knowing it gives you a sense of identity, gives you a sense of self-esteem. It's also a cautionary tales to learn from and make decisions by. So it's very important to be familiar with your history. Otherwise, you're just making all the same mistakes anyone would make.
Over and over again, yeah.
Yeah, so it's also fascinating. And really, it's interesting for young people to see that, you know, there's a story behind all of this.
Yeah.
It's interesting for older people, because it's... you know, it's nostalgic, and you can reflect on where you've been and where things are going. So it's very important. You don't have to be a historian to appreciate it.
Eric, how can people get involved with the Wichita Sedgwick County Historical Museum?
Well, I would suggest just coming and visit. We're downtown, and we get people through every day who say to us that they've lived here their entire lives, and they've not only never had been here, but realized we were here. So I would suggest coming and visiting. We have a very low admission fee and some free days. If you follow us on social media, we're under Wichita History as one word, and we put a lot of information out that way.
Great museum. As you say, lots and lots of artifacts and things like typewriters and phone booths. Our grandkids just had a ball. They loved it down there.
And I'm glad to hear that. That's what we were hoping for.
All right. Hey, listen, thanks for spending some time with us, and I'm sure you're going to make sure everything's as clean as possible down there. Folks can come down and visit you at the museum. And again, thanks for being with us, Eric,
as we celebrate
the sesquicentennial of Wichita, the 150th anniversary. Our guest, Eric Kale, Executive Director, Wichita Sedgwick County Historical Museum. That's all for this edition of Issues 2020, and we'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.